Hello? Did anybody else join?
If you heard a beep, it was probably me responding to a voice telling me to press 1 to confirm.
Oh, great.
If I wanted to be recorded or not.
Yeah. It's just part of the protocol here. So tell me your name again. Is Jay?
Yeah, J-A-Y Moynihan. M as in mother, O-Y, N as in Nancy, I, H-A-N as in Nancy.
Great.
Yeah, I'm with UW Extension in Wisconsin in John O. County. I'm a county educator.
Okay, super. And how did you hear about the Climate Literacy Network?
You know, I can't really remember to tell you the truth. I think I sent in my application in November or December or something, or, you know, wanted to join. I can't remember where I heard about it right now. It could have been any number of vectors on that.
Right.
Yeah. I'm with NEFL, National Network of Sustainable Living Education, on their climate. I kind of chair their climate change team.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Yeah,
I don't know anything about that organization, so...
Yeah, there's not a whole lot of people in it. It's basically sustainability education. There's different teams with different interests.
And what's it called again?
A National Network for Sustainable Living Education.
And so how do you pronounce the acronym?
NETL.
NETL, okay.
NETL, like nestling in, NETL.
Oh, okay.
And I'm also on the outreach team of a thing we have in Wisconsin called WICCI, W-I-C-C-I, which is Wisconsin Initiative on Climate Change Impact. And there's various teams, there's like science teams, stuff like that, and I'm on the outreach team, and it solely has to do essentially with climate change adaptation, what conditions will be changing over time, et cetera.
Interesting.
Is Elaine Andrews on that?
Oh, if Elaine Andrews is a member, yeah, she's on that team, too.
Wiki. Yeah, it sounds like something that she's doing, yeah.
Has anybody else here? Is that you, Karen?
It is I.
And it's okay. Marta also. And Bora.
And Sky.
All sorts of people.
And Laura.
All right. And Jay, since this is your first time, you have no idea who Karen and Marta and Bora and Laura are, but have a little round of introductions here in a minute.
Okay.
In fact, I guess, why don't we go ahead and do that right now, since we're stalling a little bit until we are sure that everybody who's going to join has joined. But Happy New Year, everybody. It's another day with all ones in it.
Oh, yeah. It is. Fun day.
And Karen, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself, and we'll just kind of go around. Jay Moynihan has joined us for the first time, and Jay, maybe you can give everybody a bit of an overview once we've had everybody else introduce themselves.
Sure.
Okay, I'm Karen Holweg, and I'm immediate past president of the North American Association for Environmental Education, which is why I know Elaine Andrews, who is also a past president.
Great. And Marta, nice to hear your cheery voice.
Yeah. I'm the director of EcoArts Connections, which brings together science, arts, and other organizations around issues of climate change and sustainability. We do that with performances and exhibits and talks and tours and other stuff.
And anything new on the Tipping Point Project?
Oh.
The Tipping Point Project, we have a grant into NSF, and that's to bring together scientists and artists to talk about climate change and sustainability, and we'll hear in April whether or not that's funded, so that's coming up, but more immediately is at the AMS conference, there's an exhibit that we helped to put together, thanks to also Peggy Lamone, who's the chair of AMS and president, and it's 36 artists and 8 scientists.
Wow.
And so there are, they're all Seattle-based, Washington-based. It's a local curator. We're trying out this sort of new model of trying to have artists and scientists working together. The scientists actually come from all over the country and Australia. And so we put out the invite to the artists to see whether any of them would be interested in collaborating with scientists. The title of the exhibit is Forecast, Communicating Weather and Climate. And 8 of those artists said yes. So then Peggy Lamone and Steve Ackerman, who some of you might know, found the scientists. I asked the artists what they were interested in exploring, what topics they were interested in exploring, and then based on what they wrote for us, Peggy and Steve then found the scientists who would be interested in collaborating with them.
Wow.
So, yes, and so on my guilt list, actually, to send you guys a press release and the image. So all the work is informed by weather and climate. It's interesting because it's we wanted it to be kind of a soft lob, kind of, because there are a lot of weather forecasters in the group, and of course, you know, lots of meteorologists and climate scientists and climate folks as well, but the idea was really to try to not be in your face, which is what some of our things in the past have been, but really to get people to reflect on hopefully a deeper level. We'll see. One of the coolest things is an anorak, that, you know, a parka, that has beading on it that has, you know, all kinds of stuff about that has to do with greenhouse gases and caribou death, and I mean, it's really wild. So, and
so
then of course,
any chance that the materials will be viewable online?
Yeah, we're going to try to, you know, have that happen, and I can send the catalog or send you guys where the you know, where the catalog is.
Great.
To look.
Well, that would be great, Marta. I'll try to put it up on the website too.
Oh, cool. Who is that?
The link to it. Yeah.
Great. That would be great.
Scott Carley, who is in Seattle. Are you planning to go to
I'm hoping to. I should be around for it.
Yeah, so there's a public reception on Monday, January 24th, opens, and we had a little, you know, all of these art science collaborations are always so interesting because the you know, even though we're all speaking English, the words mean different things sometimes to different people. And so, you know, our understanding of the word public was public meant to the AMS people, the membership of AMS, and public to us, art people, meant the world. So there's only enough food for, you know, for the smaller group, but there's a cash bar. So people, we're encouraging people to come and to drink a lot, but to eat almost nothing. But especially,
it's probably the right city.
View the art and hope, you know, and talk to the artists and scientists. But some of the stuff is just really exquisite, you know. So we'll see what happens.
Marta, before you leave, I just know you mentioned Australia. Do you know that the World Environmental Education Congress is being held in Australia in July?
No. Wow.
Might be a cool venue.
Yeah, we discovered, though, you know, we put this exhibit together really fast and with almost no money. I mean, it was great because NOAA and UCAR, everybody chipped in little bits of money, which was really fabulous, but from the art side of things, we have such a much longer lead time in terms of trying to get money, trying funding. You know, it's really slow. And so if we were to do this again, we would, you know, hopefully we will, you know, we'll need at least a 2 year kind of advance.
Oh, wow.
You know, to do it. Or you know, so, or people could just give us money and we would do it right away.
I've got my checkbook out.
Ready? If you know what I mean, you know. Oh, and another thing that was really funny was at a certain point there was a funder we had, and he couldn't do the $5,000 level, but he could do smaller than that. And so the difference between $1,000 and $5,000, there wasn't anything in the middle, and you know, AMS, it wasn't their policy to create new funding things, so we lost that funder, And because the amount was so insignificant between, you know, 1,000 and 5,000, according to science. And, of course, according to artists, that's, like, a huge difference. You know?
Well,
so we learned a lot.
One thing to play off of what Karen said, this is Boris Simmons, about the World Environmental Ed Conference, but NAAE, the North American Association for Environmental Ed, is going to be in Oakland, California, in 2012, the fall of 2012, which gives you closer to your two-year.
Right, program, right, right.
And it's kind of close-ish to where you are.
Sure.
And you might look into the Albert Pierce Foundation, because they really like to fund environment arts-related type things. And
oh, great.
They have a strong relationship with NAAED. So,
great idea, Laura.
Brings a few things together.
That's great. Thank you for...
Pierce Foundation?
It's the Pierce Foundation. They're out of New Mexico, right?
Right.
New Mexico, is that what you said?
Yeah. Isn't Devin in New Mexico?
Correct.
I always forget.
If you guys have a contact there that Marty could follow up on, you could pass that on to her.
Yeah, that would be great.
What's your email address, Marty?
It's info.ecoarts, ECOARTS, at gmail.com.
I'm sorry, info.ecoarts,
ECOARTS, at gmail.com.
And thank you. Bora, since you were just speaking, could you introduce yourself for the newcomer?
Sure. My name is Bora Simmons, and I'm the director of the National Project for Excellence in Environmental Education, which is an initiative of NAAEE. But I'm based out in Eugene, Oregon. And Project for Excellence, what we've done is developed a series of guidelines for environmental education. So things that have to do with what are the qualities of good quality and effective environmental education curricular materials, so instructional materials. What are the qualities of a good environmental educator, so in terms of competencies. What we refer to as the learner guidelines, which are the equivalent of national K-12 standards for environmental literacy. So what is it that we would hope a fourth grader would know, an eighth grader, 12th grader, that kind of thing. We just published a brand new set of guidelines around early childhood environmental education. So what are the types of things you ought to think about if you're developing an early childhood environmental education program, or you were wanting to incorporate more environmental education into existing programs. So that's the kinds of things that we do.
Terrific.
And worked with Elaine Andrews. Elaine's ears must be burning at this point. For years and years and years and years, and I, too, am a past president, so it's of NAAE.
Very good. So, yeah, I this is great to hear what folks are up to, because I didn't even know about the early childhood ed report that you just mentioned, and
right.
Checking that out.
Yeah, yeah, and it was really exciting, and they are just going like hotcakes, or whatever the little saying is. There is a huge, huge interest nationwide in early childhood nature-based, environment-based, anything around that. Head Start is incredibly interested in environmental education for early childhood. So, good stuff is going on.
Yeah, great. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Scott, how are things up in Seattle?
Not too bad. We're expecting a little bit of snow, but for us, it's not that much.
Ours is coming later this afternoon.
Yeah, I think, Bora, you're probably getting it, too.
Yep.
Yeah, so I'm Scott Carley, Jay. I'm with the College of Exploration. We have actually offices here in Seattle and in Virginia, and actually now in Dorset in the UK. So we are multinational, and the College of Exploration has been around for about 15 years, and I guess our, I don't know if we have a claim to fame, it's that we've been deeply involved in developing several of the geoscience literacy framework documents, and those are essentially, I think, Bora, you would agree, this is sort of like the content side that is very complementary to what has been happening with the NAAEE guidelines, which have...
Oh, very much so. Yeah, that, I would describe it that well.
Yeah. So we've been particularly involved in the ocean and earth science literacy frameworks, and increasingly for me in the climate literacy through the Clean Project that Mark is and Bora. I'm trying to think of anyone else who is here that's deeply involved in all of that. So we're very deeply working on climate change, but in relationship to the other geospheres.
Scott, I'm here. This is Frank. I'm going on mute.
Frank, why don't you introduce yourself to the... we have a newcomer today, so we're kind of a little round of introductions.
Sorry for the background music. My name is Frank Niepold. I'm the NOAA Climate Education Coordinator and the co-chair of the interagency U.S. Global Change Research Program Education Group, and then also the federal lead editor for the climate literacy framework, and a bunch of other things too. But that's what I'll do for now.
Okay.
Is that what you're looking for, Mark?
Yeah, that's great. And anything new or exciting going on that you could share with the group here?
Well, anything new? There's a ton of things. That's the good news. Actually, I just got a call from somebody at the State Department wanting to coordinate with UNESCO on the world, I guess it's Sustainable Development Decade, and they are making some inroads into exploring climate change education relative to the sustainable development priorities of UNESCO. Given the things that's really interesting about climate change education is that where it intersects with sustainable development, energy literacy, and other related but offset issues, and how they work together is really quite interesting. But that's a new development. I mean, the issue continues to grow. It's not just about, you know, do you understand the problem? There's more to it than just that, obviously. So that's one thing. But there's many other things that we can talk about, but I don't want to chew up the whole time.
Okay, great. Thanks for the update. And I think Laura Faye Tenenbaum, you're on the line,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I'm here. Hi, everyone.
Hi, Laura.
Nice to hear your voices.
Hi, Laura.
Hi.
Is that Caroline?
Can you just...
Caroline, yes. That accent, right?
Yeah.
Hello, Mark. Caroline Lewis here.
Thanks, Caroline. We're just going around and doing some brief intros. Laura, can you introduce yourself to...
the people? Hi. I work at NASA Jet Propulsion Laboratory, and I work on the Global Climate Change website and Global Climate Change Public Engagement Team, and I also I'm kind of in control of the whole education side of the Global Climate Change at NASA and JPL. So that's me, and I've made a whole bunch of new stuff at the end of last year, and then this year nothing new at the moment, but kind of all the new things are still in development, so nothing particularly new to report today.
And for those of you not familiar with the climate.nasa.gov website, please check it out.
Yes.
And Laura has recently put up a guide for teachers called Tips and Tricks for Teachers on how to use the website in classrooms and other learning environments. Some fantastic interactives and visualizations on that site.
Yeah, we're kind of hoping that as I think there's a lot of professional development and online courses and teacher training courses and learning modules that are coming up now, and we're kind of hoping that educators are going to use our site more and more incorporated into their classes, and that's kind of part of the design of the site, is to be used in the classroom, and I'm trying to tell as many people as I can, as often as possible, where to find it. And if you have any questions about how to use it, then, you know, I'm the person to contact. I think I just also taught, this I guess is new, I have been speaking with Marion to schedule, I'm going to give a little presentation about, you know, what's going on with the website February 8th, I think, on that Tuesday. So
okay, good.
3 weeks from now, something like, 4 weeks from now, I'll be presenting to this group.
Super, that's great.
Yeah.
Mark?
Yeah.
This is Joe Whitty in Washington, D.C.
Hi, Joe.
I dialed in late and I have to leave just in about 2 minutes here.
Okay.
Just some changes here. For some of you who may or may not know, I was a TV forecaster for about 4 decades, and as of January 3rd, I just started with NASA's Education and Public Outreach under Mingying Wei to try to engage the TV forecasters around the country.
Fantastic.
So, mm-hmm. Hi, I just got that email telling me about you yesterday. It's Laura.
Yeah, are you going to be in Seattle?
For
the AMAS meeting?
I am. This is Marta.
Not that I know of. But I did get an email yesterday telling us that Ming Ying had hired you, and so we know about you on our side.
But are you on the...
To work with everybody.
Yeah, I look forward to it also.
Are you on the Climate Literacy Network listserv?
Yes, I am, Mark.
Would you go ahead and send a note out to the list, sort of introducing yourself, and how people can get in touch with you? Because I know some of the people on this call will be in Seattle at AMS, and
good.
Sounds like it would be great for all of you to get together there if you have a chance.
Yeah, maybe you ought to have a CLN coffee or something like that, or a drink
at
the bar. So
yeah,
we
that'd be
great. Get together and see each other face-to-face.
Mm-hmm.
I think you probably missed, Marta was talking about an exhibit with the artists and scientists collaborated on.
I got caught up on that, and so I'm anxious to see that. And then also during that Saturday and Sunday in Seattle, we have the climate change workshops going on, which you probably have mentioned already.
Hey.
Well, Joe, can you send around the Saturday and Sunday climate change stuff? I unfortunately don't get there until, this is Frank, I don't get there
Hi,
until
Frank.
Monday, and I have to leave on Wednesday, but I definitely would like to touch base on that. And also, Marta, I'd love some more information about the exhibit.
Great, definitely. And if we can have coffee or something, that would be great. I know you're going to be running.
It's Seattle. We have coffee in Seattle.
I know. There's a lot.
Not every block.
Exactly.
Joe, how do you spell your last name?
Witte.
Great.
And I'm also at the Center of Climate Change Communication at George Mason trying to do a PhD on this project.
Oh, fantastic.
Great.
I'm pleased to hear about that.
Unfortunately, I have to run, but I will...
Glad you could join us.
...and listen in on next week. All right, bye-bye.
Bye, Joe. Talk to you.
So, Caroline, could you introduce yourself?
Yep, Caroline Lewis here. I am a working founder and CEO of the CLIO Institute, and our goal is just to scale up the most effective environmental literacy civic engagement type programs. With respect to this group, I am public engagement models is where my energy goes, and Laura will be talking later. We are so excited. We're putting together a proposal with Miami-Dade College, which is an 8-campus community college here in Miami, 170,000 kids, Hispanic serving pretty much, and the school district as well, and excited to be using some NASA data and maybe getting some help from Laura in that area.
Oh, yes, please.
Okay. Yeah, no, I'm going to introduce you later today to a few people who I'm dying to speak to you.
Oh, good. Well, to be honest with you, I've got to get off this phone call in about 5 minutes. I'm going to be touring DreamWorks the rest of the afternoon. But send
we just email you. How about
an email
introduction?
And we'll set up a phone meeting for tomorrow.
Yeah, wonderful. And this network has just been great for me to access some good minds and some good information. So I appreciate it. Is David Blockstein on today?
I don't think so.
He's another one on my hit list, but no, that's what I'm looking on now.
and by the way, we do have archives of past Climate Literacy Network calls. This call is somewhat unusual because we don't have a speaker, so we're kind of just updating and sharing information with each other. But Scott, you can confirm this, but I believe that Caroline's presentation from a month and a half, 2 months ago, is up on the Climate Literacy website?
It certainly should be. I'm actually on there right now updating Laura's talk on the 8th of February.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that.
I'll just make sure that Caroline's stuff is there right now.
Super.
Yeah.
All right, and so, Don, did I hear you on the call?
Yep. I'm Don Dugenhoff. I'm at the Paleontological Research Institution and its Museum of the Earth, which is in Ithaca. And I do a variety of things related to earth science teacher professional development and curriculum materials development. And one thing that I did related to that last year about this time was help nudge people along to NAAAE, which last year was in Buffalo. But I bring this up because I got an email nudge reminding me that proposals are due for this year on February 1st for the meeting in Raleigh-Durham. Is that right, where it is?
Yep, right.
So we did, the Climate Literacy Network did some sessions, coordinated sessions last year that I think were well received and that we ought to think about doing again. And given that it's just a couple of weeks, 3 weeks still... those proposals are due, maybe we ought to spend some time talking about that today.
Okay, sounds good.
Can I just bring one thing up? It's Laura before I have to go.
Yeah.
Don reminded me of this when he said he works on professional development, and I was wondering if anybody had a place on the Internet that regularly updates and lists professional development opportunities. So that, you know, it was kind of an ongoing. I know that there's places that list kind of courses and resources, but is there anywhere currently that's kind of really good at that?
Not that I'm aware of.
Because it seems like that could be really useful.
Okay. So on the climate portal, you know, climate.gov, there is a section that in a prototype phase we have, but we've made that a priority to build a comprehensive list. But the most of the work that we do and other agencies do is on the NSDA Learning Center. So there's web seminars, there's interactive 2-hour long, you know, courses on specific topics.
Would Don's professional development be listed through NSDA?
It could be. I mean, these, all these things, but the climate portal would probably be the better way to, I mean, we're in the middle of redesigning that page. That was just a sketch of what it could be.
Mm-hmm.
But professional development, climate professional development is a very high priority piece. But on a federal website, if there's some money associated from a grant that's, you know, out of a federal agency, it's a candidate. But if it's just, you know, something an organization put together and there's no federal role,
mm-hmm.
We tend not to focus on those. But that's you know, what's in the design of the next generation for climate.gov, especially as it goes interagency.
Yeah, no, it does. It just makes sense that there should be a place
Absolutely.
Where educators could find all the opportunities and then, you know, pick the ones
yeah.
that are, you know,
Correct.
Right. Right. And the are two pieces of it. There's the opportunities, which is more face-to-face, and then there are the resources, professional development resources, which are more asynchronous kind of stuff. And we're focusing on both of them, but, you know, the design isn't there yet for public consumption, but it's something that we aim to make happen.
All right, well, that's good to know. I know there are lots of places where you can find resources. It's just the professional development. You kind of find out about it randomly rather
yeah.
than...
Right, yep. Well, I mean, it's the professional development resources, the stuff that's asynchronous. Is really the key piece that if we're ever going to hit the scale for. There are probably about 6 million educators who need professional development when it comes to, and that's not including the university community. So, I mean, it's probably in the order of 7 million. So we're never going to do that with face-to-face. It's impossible.
So the blended model of both face-to-face and professional development. So those are opportunities and resources.
Interesting.
But anyway, that's kind of where we are in our thinking now.
Yeah, it should be kind of a one-stop shop to find out where all that stuff is. It'd be really useful.
Right. And then, you know, the other piece of that is that the Queen Pathway establishes kind of a framework of how you would organize a comprehensive collection so that you knew you had coverage on all the key topics.
Mm-hmm.
That's the other piece of it is that a lot of people are building the same thing, and a lot of people aren't figuring out that there is nobody working on a key part, and it's really trying to figure out what's missing.
I get that. There's a lot of duplication going on, and then not a centralized hub,
right.
Is kind of lacking. Yeah.
Right, and to be able to look
page.
At the gaps.
Yeah.
Exactly. That doesn't exist yet, but we're working on it as we speak.
Awesome. Good to hear.
But I mean, when I say we, the we is growing because so many different groups are building so many different pieces. We don't want to be redundant in any way until we have the luxury of doing that. And that's not looking like it's going to come anytime soon.
Oh, too bad.
Frank, that 6 million figure that you came up with, that's science teachers or?
So here's what that is. It's teachers of science is 3 million. That's 1.5 million elementary. Every elementary teacher is supposed to be a teacher of science. And then there's about 750,000 and another 750,000, each kind of almost equally split between middle school and high school. That's the 3 million figure that comes out of NSDA, and they've done a lot of analysis. I mean, it's approximately that many. And then the informal museums, explainers at national parks, state parks, all that, wildlife centers, is probably in another 3 million on top of that, plus university professors who would be working in these fields. And remember, that doesn't include the social science teachers.
Yeah.
Or it doesn't include the other disciplines in this interdisciplinary subject of climate. Those aren't in that number, so it's actually higher.
Yeah.
So if I had to just ballpark it, we're probably talking about 10 million educators, somewhere in that range.
Okay, great.
So, I mean, but when Joe Witte was on the phone, there are probably 300, somewhere in that order, 300 broadcast meteorologists, who speak daily and in some ways, if you think of them as educators. They're a much smaller group, but it might be 3,000 or 300. I always forget. It's somewhere in that range. So, every time you look for a new audience of educators or whatever way, it turns out to be, a growing number. But it's a sizable group of people.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, great. Thanks for the information update. Laura, have fun out at DreamWorks.
Thank you, guys, and I'll be on the call next week, so I'll talk to you then. Thank you so much. Okay.
Thanks, Laura.
So, anybody else on the call today that I didn't introduce themselves yet?
Yes,
well,
yes.
Jay,
I'm new to the group. Go ahead.
This is Jay. I should probably tell people who I am.
Yeah, go ahead, Jay.
Okay. Jay Moynihan. I'm with University of Wisconsin Extension. And I'm with the Department of Community Resource Development. I'm an office in Shawano County, and if, of course, you don't know where that is, but it's east of Green Bay by about 30 miles and about 200 miles north of Milwaukee. I used to co-chair and still a member of our institution sustainability team. Jerry Hemb was my co-chair, and he still is a co-chair, if any of you know him. I'm also belong to NESL and chair their, which is National Network for Sustainable Living Education, and I chair their climate change team, and a couple folks, climate-related folks from NIFA and the Department of Agriculture are active in that group also, and so educators scattered around the country. I also am on WIKI, which is Wisconsin Initiative on Climate Change Impact, which is concerned with adaptation. lots of different types of people on that with different disciplines. I'm on the outreach committee, as is Elaine Andrews, whose name I heard come up. And I do a blog called Adaptation Factory that's primarily about climate change adaptation, but it's raising other things at times. And there's other stuff. I'll just send out an email to the listserv with things like that. And I heard somebody mention Seattle. I got out to Seattle in 2009 for the first time and taught a class at Bainbridge Graduate Institute out in the island, or one of the islands there, on rapid climate change strategy for business, and really liked that city.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
Right.
Been here 20 years.
You know, actually, Scott, do we have any member profiles on the website? Is that something that we could do? It seems
we
that it would be good to...
I mean, we've done it for our Clean Project, which, you know, is a subset of folks here, but we haven't done that. That's a great idea. If people are comfortable with that, of having just a bit of, you know, basically who to contact in an area, you know, like knowing where we are in the country.
But also, I mean, just...
The social networking site here.
Yeah.
I don't know about that.
Yeah.
No.
Oh, we're not doing that. We're not dating and stuff.
Well, no. I mean, it's just you know, it's just a bunch of you know, you get a bunch of other stuff when you do that.
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
That's completely distracting.
Yes.
Mark.
Yes.
I sent out an email with an agenda item, and if everybody has finished with introductions, I'd like to spend just a little bit of time on the NAAEE 2011 conference for session proposals.
Sure, that sounds good. Was there anybody else that is on the call that didn't have a chance to introduce themselves?
Yeah, this is Lynn. Hi.
Oh, hey, Lynn.
And I haven't met this group before.
Excuse me?
My name is John Anderson. I'm calling from Boston from the New England Aquarium.
Okay.
And I've been interested for years in the question of how do we translate complex climate change related topics for public audiences, and so that's an area of interest for me, and thinking about how to help aquarium communicators or aquarium interpreters to learn how to do that well, and it's a challenge.
John, are you involved in any of the grants with NOAA? Is it Billy Sweet? Is that how you say it?
Billy Spitzer. Billy Spitzer and I work very closely together. He's my direct supervisor, and I'm working on all three of the one from with support from the Institute of Museum and Library Services, one with support from NOAA, and one with support from NSF, and they are all different but related projects.
Yep. Excellent. I didn't know you had an IMLS one. That's great.
Yeah, that was the first one, and actually the others came about because of things we were beginning to learn with that, with the collaborations through that. So, and one thing I guess this group might be interested, one of the shifts I have seen in conversations about how to do education is the idea that as educators and educators about science, there's an important role for us to learn about social and cognitive sciences and use what psychologists and anthropologists and other and others who are studying how do people understand information, that we all need to learn a lot from them to help us be more effective, and that's an area that really intrigues me, and our NSF grant is working, trying to really look at that very carefully.
Yes, and on some of our past Climate Literacy Network calls, we've had folks, for instance, some of the people that were involved with the American Psychological Association Task Force on Behavior and Climate Change presented their findings from about a year ago, and then also the group at Columbia that have a guidebook on effective climate communication. They have been on some of our past calls as well. So I think, again, a lot of that information and the presentation should be up on our Climate Literacy Network website.
Mm-hmm. And Mark, this is Caroline Lewis. The Climate Change Education Roundtable that several of us attended was knee-deep. That was on public understanding, and Billy Spitzer was there, isn't he one of you?
Yep.
Aquarium?
Yep,
yeah.
That's correct.
He was, and the social context element of climate change education was front and center with lots of excellent reports, Susan Clayton and others, and access points for people. So Billy probably has the direct links from that. I would definitely ask him to share that with you so that you can read some of the great work out there on that.
He and I talk all the time. We are our offices are very close to each other, so yeah, we're sharing. We're certainly sharing that kind of information. And the Columbia, you know, the digest from Columbia University, I've referred a lot of people to that, and we've talked through it with our department and so forth. So we're trying to really figure out how to work with that information and with our own staff and then with others.
But yeah, I think John, one thing that maybe you, a part of the network that we haven't built yet is all the papers that we use as evidence to, you know, find this works, that doesn't work, this approach is much more useful if you do that. There's tons of literature now in this area that didn't used to be there that we need to build an archive of which papers are really seminal papers. You know, when you talk to Tony Lazarowitz, what he says is a lot of that citation work was built into the America's Climate Choices informing reports. So there's just a rich repository of research, and then if a new paper comes out, it would be nice if we had a library somewhere to go and go, you know, are these papers are they in there yet? Oh, no, they're not. I have a new paper on civic science literacy related to climate from John Miller that's in press. That's really got some interesting pieces in it, but I imagine no one on this call knows about that paper.
Right.
You know, I think it's one of the things of a network like ours is to be able to, you know, when we learn something, share it with the network and see if others have already learned that. So it makes it a little bit easier than always having to do it over and over again.
This is Caroline Lewis. Can I please second that? We're all getting tons of information from each other. And if any of you are doing what I'm doing, we're each creating our own little filing system when we have a minute to categorize and organize these. And I'm like about 77,000 behind. And I don't know if it's within the scope of work of the Climate Literacy Network. But, Mark, I'd like to formally request that some of that culling and organizing and sorting and sectioning happens there so that we can access them in more meaningful ways efficiently, because I think 25 of us are doing what I'm doing.
But it would be nice, Carolyn, and Scott, I don't know if you're the person who does this, and I don't know what the cost or time or money, but it would be nice if there was an automatic way so that anyone could manage the library as long as they were a Literacy Network member, so you don't get craziness going on there, but so that you won't have we don't have to send it to you or somebody like that, and then they have to do all the work. But whatever way makes sense to build that library, I think is a good idea.
We certainly have a section for documents, but I literally just looked at it, and there's only four of them in there, two of which were created by this group. So we have a lot more we can do with that, and I'm very interested in seeing that develop. What I can say, and this is in regard to what you were saying, Frank, is that it's really kind of difficult to have people have access to the website. It's just how much you would have to know to be able to put things up. So at this time, what I'm going to try to do is, as people put things up on the email stuff, I'm going to try to transfer some of that up over to the web pages. I've been doing that already this morning in terms of just some of the congresses and upcoming conferences. I've been trying to update that stuff as we go, so it's done. And the same should be with documents that we're recognizing. Though I think in the end we're probably going to have to be a little bit more sophisticated than just sort of putting them up you know, individually. We probably need to put them in a database and have to be searchable and all that kind of stuff. But
Right.
It's better than nothing, though.
Exactly. I mean, we are a free enterprise, so we can ask for a lot.
We are indeed.
Okay.
Although, you know, actually, just on that note, and unfortunately I'm going to have to scoot, you know, if we ask for membership,
you know, $20 a year, $30 a year, I'd be more than happy to be a member of the Climate Literacy Network and pay an annual membership. If that helped us, we've never actually figured out a way to actually get money to make this happen successfully, but, you know, I'd be willing to pay money into that personally out of my personal pocket. I can't do it on my NOAA account, help make things happen.
So, well, exactly. I would do $30 too, even $50, if the access to organized, reliable sources was part of the deal. Yeah.
So just floating out there as an idea. But I'm glad I was able to join today, and I look forward to next week. Talk to you all.
Bye.
Thanks. And
Mark, I actually never got a chance to introduce myself.
No, I was going to ask you to introduce yourself, Lynn.
Thank you. So I'm Lynn Cherry, the author of How We Know What We Know About Our Changing Climate, Scientist and Kids Explore Global Warming with Gary Brosh. And I wanted to invite you all that it's getting an award at the American Meteorological Society, the Lewis J. Batten Award, and they're having a reception, and I just sent that out, so the information is on the CLN.
Excellent.
Okay. Yeah, and so I'm going to be there, but I really haven't made any other plans, and I was thinking it'd be nice maybe if there's any way to, I know it's kind of late notice, you know, but to show the films. For anybody who doesn't know, I also produce the Young Voices on Climate Change films about kids who reduce their CO2 emissions. So if anyone has any ideas about how we might show them there, because it would be really cool if some of these weather people started showing them on their, you know, when they were doing the weather forecasting, even little snippets of them, you know.
Yeah, good idea. So anybody who's going to be in Seattle could maybe get in touch with Lynn offline or you know, since we don't know who in the Climate Literacy Network community is going to be in Seattle, you know, go ahead and send something out to the list, I think. I know that Karen would like to discuss, at least get a conversation started about the NAAE meeting coming up next year.
October of this year.
Yeah, okay, this year, right. But let me just briefly introduce myself. My name is Mark McCaffrey. I'm at the University of Colorado in Boulder, and I helped found the Climate Literacy Network going on about years ago now. And I am involved with the CLEAN Project, which is the Climate Literacy Energy Awareness Network, CLEANET.org. And also, I will be gone for the next 3 weeks because I'm off to visit my wife, who has recently started a job in Geneva, Switzerland. So I will be giving presentations at the World Meteorological Organization in Geneva next week, and also UNEP, United Nations Environmental Program. So I'll be out of pocket and traveling, and actually, between you and me, I'll be looking for job opportunities over there in Europe that might allow us to take some of the energy and climate literacy work that we're involved with here to try to take it to a international level. So I'll be sure to update you all on how that goes. And as I think most of you know, I have a climate literacy blog that sometimes is very timely and other times is languishing. Right now, it's languishing a bit because I've been just too busy with other things. So
this is Jay. Could you send out to the list the URL for your blog, please? I'd like to add that to mine.
Sure.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Be happy to do that.
This is Carol.
Sorry?
This, and I'm calling from the Bird Polar Research Center. I've been listening most of the message, but I'm an intermittent visitor to the Climate Literacy Network group.
Could you say your name again?
Carol Landis.
Oh, great. Thanks for joining us.
Sure. I'm the education outreach specialist at Bird Polar Research Center at Ohio State. And we've done several climate change workshops with teachers, and we've developed a DVD, actually it's developed by teachers for teachers, that's available for free download. And we're going to be using that with a hybrid workshop. It has also been translated to Spanish, and we're in the final stages of editing the every little accent mark that is missing, and so we're making progress, and I think I would also benefit from knowing more of what kinds of resources are out there and, like you say, cataloged and searchable in some way. Thank you very much.
Yeah, so Carol, if you're not familiar with the Climate Literacy Energy Awareness Network, CLEANET.org, check that out, because it's a National Science Digital Library pathway focusing on climate and energy topics. So I think with that, anybody else didn't have a chance to introduce themselves? Just want to make sure we're inclusive here today. Karen, I apologize that I didn't see your note suggesting that we talk about the NAAEE meeting. We've got about 10 minutes left, and it may be a discussion that ultimately could be a self-organized group of people who are planning to go or want to be involved with the planning for that. But as Don mentioned earlier in the call, I guess the deadline for proposals is coming up at the end of the month, right?
Right, February 1st. And all of you should have an email from me with the same CLN members, CLN call 1111 that says agenda item on it that was delivered about an hour and a half ago.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
if you click on the link on that, and I'd ask you all to do that if you're right now, the link in that message, it'll take you to the details for submitting a proposal to the NAAEE annual conference, which is coming right up in October. As Mark said, the deadline for submitting proposals is February 1st, and the date of the conference, as listed on that link on the NAAEE website, is October 12th to 15th. And what I'd like to ask you to do quickly is scroll down to page 3, you have to click on submitting proposals. Where is that?
Proposal submission, right box, top. On the 8th annual.
PDF, is that what you're trying to point us to?
Yep, there it is.
I'm sorry, click on?
I'm on page 3.
If you're on the link that I sent, go down to the middle of that message, and it says when you're ready to submit.
Okay.
Yeah.
Go to. Help, wrong, sorry.
No. You know where it is, Karen? This is Caroline. It's right there under 8th Annual NAE Research Symposium, Proposal, Submission, and Review Process, on the top of the page.
All right. Don't do the one on the right. Do the one on the left.
Okay, on the left. All right.
And the reason why mine doesn't show up that it's linked is I already opened it up. That's my problem. Sorry.
yeah.
So if you go down to page, as we've said, under NAAE 40th Annual Conference, in the little box on the left, there's a proposal submission and review process.
Mm-hmm.
Click on that, and then go down to page 3 on the English version I'm going to use. And there's a section that's entitled Session Format. That's what I'd like to talk through quickly. There are traditional presentations that are either 20 or 40 minutes in length. There are poster sessions. There are hands-on presentations, which are an hour and 20 minutes. There are symposiums, which are panels or meet the press style format presentations that are an hour and 20 minutes. And then roundtable discussions, which are more informal one-on-one sessions and film presentations. What we did last year, a group of several of us, including Don and Scott and Bora and Tamara, organized a symposium, and it was well attended, and then we had roundtable sessions. When we debriefed the conference in Buffalo last year, we said, you know, it would be really good if we could organize a symposium on climate change and then have roundtables afterwards. And I'm willing to try to do the behind-the-scenes work that needs to be done to make that happen. And I think would be a really nice way to get climate change more in a more organized way for participants in the conference. There's a whole climate change education strand, so there's an opportunity for many proposals. I've already gotten an email back from a woman who's not on our call today who said she's going to submit, and I'm sure there will be many people in the network who will submit individually. What I'd like to do, we have another 5 minutes, is both brainstorm ideas for sessions that we might organize as a network as opposed to individual sessions. If you're planning on submitting an individual session for a project that you have, please email me so that I'll know who in the network is planning on submitting individual proposals of one kind or another. But let's take a couple minutes just to brainstorm possible symposium sessions that the Climate Literacy Network might organize and sponsor.
This is Lynn Cherry. I would be really interested in being part of a symposium about success stories. Because, Karen, you've seen the films, right?
Yeah, this is a brainstorming session. We're not going to go through long explanations. Success stories and a one-sentence description, Lynn.
Well, I just thought if people had seen the films, then they would know what I'm talking about. But
okay, all right, next. Who else has an idea?
I think this is Don. I think we could do a repeat of the Funders Symposium, which just had folks from different federal agencies talking about funding opportunities in climate change education.
Okay, good. Anybody else?
Yeah, this is Bora. As a follow-up on the meeting that was in San Francisco at Art Sussman's house, it might be nice to have a panel discussion on some of the major funded programs, so some of the, you know, so CLEAN and some of the others, so that people know what's out there and how they might be able to network into them.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Good. Okay.
Another one. This is Marta. It might be the sort of the combination of cognition and affect for greater effect.
Mm. There you go.
Wow.
Yeah.
But the other thing, and part of that, too, could be, I mean, this is sort of confessing what I've just found out, which is just about the Mad Men. Have people seen Mad Men, that sort of basic soap opera about advertising agencies? Anyway, on the DVD version, they have a really interesting two-part series on the cigarette advertising industry and how they basically, within 20 years, got everybody to smoke, and then what the tobacco, the anti-smoking folks have done in the following 20 years to get everybody to not smoke.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really interesting.
Okay, other ideas?
This is Borgen. We've talked about this before. It seems to me that it would be nice to have maybe a bigger discussion around the notion of how do you teach about controversial issues and use climate change as the kind of focus. And that brings in some of Frank's concerns about advocacy versus education and where's the line. It brings in some of Susan Burr's notions about, and Mark, yours, about misconceptions and what are the misconceptions that are out there. Because if you don't understand the misconceptions, you certainly can't teach about issues. So that may be a focus of something.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I like that.
This is Caroline. Karen, we might want to have a live web access one to to interact with audiences about how much is online and available. The Skeptic Science website would completely answer what Bora just suggested.
Right. Yeah.
And I think if we show people how easy to access that is and how they can share it, among others, might be a really good thing.
Cool. Okay. Keep thinking. I'm going to ask Tamara if we can continue this discussion on next week's call. In the last minute we have, let me tell you that on the short list of keynotes for this conference are, because of the emphasis on climate change at the conference, are Al Gore and Jim Hansen and Alexandria Cousteau and Lisa Jackson.
Congratulations.
Would any of you... They're not confirmed. They're on the short list.
Are you saying you haven't asked them yet?
What I'm interested in getting from you is if any of you have recommendations about those four, or preferences, or 2 seconds worth to say about any of those.
This is Marta. If you want to be nonpartisan, I wouldn't invite Al Gore.
Yeah.
Correct.
Okay,
great.
Other ideas?
Jim Hansen is just a wonderful talk.
Yeah.
He talks about solutions, and just, I think he's a really broad, his speech is very broad, and talks about education.
He did a great thing at AGU. Nice presentation there.
I'd also recommend Lonnie Thompson. He's done a great job, and I've heard him at AGU. The other thing is he's an optimist, and always looks at opportunities. So sometimes the climate change stuff can be a downer.
Yeah,
correct.
Okay. Any other comments? Any comments about Lisa Jackson? We haven't heard it.
I think it would be great to get a government minority representative speaking.
And they're free.
Okay, great. Well, thank you very much for your ideas. And as I said, I hope you'll continue thinking about this in the next week so that we can perhaps continue a little bit and decide on who's going to do what to possibly organize a Climate Literacy Network symposium or two. There's a lot of great ideas that you've tossed out, and I'll try to summarize them so we don't have to start from scratch next week and can keep going.
And, Karen, why don't you get in touch with Marian Grogan at Turk? Do you know Marian?
Yes.
She's the one who organizes the topics for the meetings.
Oh, good. Okay.
Yeah. I'm assuming it's okay for next week, but she may have something lined up.
Yeah, there's nothing scheduled now on the website.
Oh, thanks, Scott.
Yeah.
Okay.
All righty. Great.
Travel safely, Mark.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And we'll be in touch when I get back. So, anything else before we sign off today? All right.
Cheerio.
Thanks, everybody, for joining us today, and we will talk to you all soon.
Great. Bye-bye.
Thanks.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye.